Hi, I'm Amy Goodman. This year, Democracy Now! Turns 25 years old. That's right, 25 years of bringing you the voices and stories you won't hear in the corporate media. Democracy Now! Has always refused to take government or corporate funding because nothing is more important to us than our editorial independence. Nothing is more important to us than telling you the truth. But that means we rely on you, our audience, for support. Please visit democracynow.org right now and make your $25 contribution in honor of our 25th anniversary and help us stay on air for another 25 years and then another 25 after that. Thank you so much. And remember, wearing a mask is an act of love. Wearing two is even better.
From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
25 years ago, on February 19th, 1996, Democracy Now! Went on the air. Today, we take a freewheeling journey through the years.
Chevron, just like Shell, uses the military to protect its oil activities. They drill and they kill.
Now, you just listen to me. You ask the questions, and I'm going to answer. You have asked questions in a hostile, combative, and even disrespectful tone, and you have never been able to combat the facts.
You are Troy Davis. We are Troy Davis.
Are you telling the dogs to bite the protesters? The dog has blood in its nose and its mouth. Why are you letting their dog go after the protesters? It's covered in blood.
We're in occupied Western Sahara, in Laayoon, the capital of what many call Africa's last colony.
Kennedy Airport, outside Terminal 4, where thousands of people have gathered to protest the Trump administration's executive order.
Twenty-five years ago, Democracy Now! Started on 9 community radio stations. It now airs on over 1,500 television and radio stations around the globe. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Millions of U.S. residents endured another day with shortages of water, heat, or electricity Thursday as the death toll from winter storms rose to at least 49. More than 13 million Texans remain under a boil water advisory, and some 200,000 had no power days after Texas's power grid collapsed amid record low temperatures. The Electric Reliability Council of Texas, which operates the grid, said Thursday, the state was seconds and minutes away from a catastrophic failure that could have led to a months-long blackout. This week's power outages also led to big delays in COVID-19 vaccine distribution and soaring fuel prices around the country. During an earnings call Wednesday, Executive Roland Burns of the natural gas producer Comstock Resources celebrated the winter weather disaster.
This week is like hitting the jackpot, is some of these incredible prices. I mean, we were able to get super premium prices for a material amount of production.
On Thursday, Mexico's president, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, called on Mexicans to ration electricity after Texas shut off exports of natural gas amidst the crisis. Meanwhile, Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz returned to his home in Houston Thursday, a day after his family fled to Mexico, to Cancun, to escape the blackout and winter cold. Text messages show Cruz's wife complained the family's home was freezing and invited others to join the family at the Ritz-Carlton in Cancun. On Thursday, Senator Cruz defended his actions as he prepared to board a flight back to Texas.
Yesterday, my daughters asked if they could take a trip with some friends, and Heidi and I agreed, so I flew down with them last night, dropped them off here, and now I'm headed back to Texas and back to continuing to work to try to get the power on.
Senator Cruz was initially booked to stay in Mexico until Saturday. He was met by protesters calling for his resignation at Houston's airport and in the bitter cold outside his home with signs that said resign and fled Cruz. In South Africa, health authorities have launched a trial campaign of the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine as they battle a coronavirus variant that's become dominant across Southern Africa. The pivot to the Johnson & Johnson vaccine came after a small clinical trial showed the AstraZeneca vaccine failed to prevent most cases of mild and moderate disease in South Africa. South African officials have pledged to share unused doses of the AstraZeneca shot with other African nations. In Peru, revelations that politicians secretly received China's Sinopharm vaccine as early as last September, before it was even approved, have rocked Peru. Then-President Martin Vizcarra was one of just hundreds who were reportedly given the shot as Peru's death toll surged. Pfizer says its COVID-19 vaccine might not need to be kept at ultra-low temperatures anymore and is asking the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to allow its shots to be stored at temperatures found in common pharmaceutical freezers. If approved, the change could greatly ease distribution of the Pfizer vaccine. Meanwhile, Cuba is approaching the final testing phase for its own vaccine, Soberana 2 or Sovereign 2. Cuba has said it may offer the vaccine to tourists once it's approved. In the United States, more than 2,500 people died of COVID-19 Thursday, with another 70,000 new cases recorded. The official U.S. death toll is on pace to top a 500,000 before the end of the month. The Washington Post reports that, on average, one person died of COVID-19 every 28 seconds in January. President Joe Biden is visiting Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine manufacturing plant in Michigan today to continue his push for a proposed $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief package. Biden will also appear at a virtual summit of G7 leaders to announce the U.S. will give $4 billion to COVAX, the international program to get vaccines to poorer countries. Former President Trump opted out of COVAX last summer. Biden is also giving his first presidential speech aimed at an international audience. At a virtual meeting of the Munich Security Conference, Biden will focus on restoring U.S. ties with Western European allies in a united front against Russia and China. In immigration news, the Biden administration issued new guidelines Thursday directing Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, to focus apprehensions and deportations on asylum seekers and immigrants who've recently crossed into the U.S. and those who are determined to be national security and public safety threats. Immigrant justice advocates warn Biden's new enforcement rules continue to criminalize immigrants and asylum seekers. They also denounce the targeting of incarcerated and formerly incarcerated immigrants and refugees. In a statement, the American Civil Liberties Union called Biden's plan a disappointing step backward, adding, quote, "While the Biden administration rightly acknowledges that immigrants are our family members, our co-workers, and our neighbors, for now it's chosen to continue giving ICE officers significant discretion to conduct operations that harm our communities and tear families apart." in Ethiopia. Residents of the city of Aksum have described a massacre by Eritrean troops last November. A deacon at the Church of St. Mary of Zion told the Associated Press as many as 800 people were killed by Eritrean soldiers who burst into the church, cornering and dragging out worshipers and shooting at those who fled. Some 3 million people have been displaced since a conflict broke out in Ethiopia's Tigray region late last year, and opposition groups say at least 52,000 people have been killed. The U.S. said it's prepared to have talks with Iran and other parties involved in the 2015 Iran nuclear deal, which former President Trump unilaterally withdrew from. The U.S. has said it would return to the agreement if Tehran came into full compliance, though Iran has repeatedly said the U.S. must first lift all sanctions imposed by Trump. On Thursday, the Biden administration lifted travel restrictions for Iranian diplomats to the U.N. in New York City. Satellite imagery shows Israel has been expanding its Dimona nuclear facility in the Negev Desert. The secretive facility has played a key role in equipping Israel's nuclear arsenal. The U.S. Capitol Police Department has suspended 6 officers without pay over their actions during the January 6th attack on Congress, including an officer who posed for selfies with members of Trump's mob. Another officer wore a red MAGA hat and directed rioters around the Capitol building. 29 other officers remain under investigation. A federal appeals court has rejected a bid from New York police unions to keep disciplinary records from the public after lawmakers last summer repealed the controversial 50A law amid the historic Black Lives Matter uprising. Advocates are calling on Mayor Bill de Blasio to release the records without delay. He said they could be released as early as next week. Vice President Kamala Harris said Thursday the 2.5 million women who had to leave the U.S. workforce due to the pandemic is a national emergency, as she urged support for the administration's $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief package. At a virtual event on women and the economy hosted by Harris Thursday, California Congressmember Barbara Lee addressed the issue of poverty.
This crisis has plunged more than 8 million more people into poverty since last year. About 1 in 7 households nationwide, including more than 1 in 5 and Latino households and many Asian American, Pacific Islander and Native American households are struggling just to secure the food that they need.
And in Guatemala City, thousands took to the streets Thursday in a protest led by indigenous leaders denouncing years of state violence against indigenous communities. Protesters are also demanding the resignation of the president. This is former presidential candidate and indigenous leader Thelma Cabrera speaking to the crowd.
The worst pandemic that exists in Guatemala is corruption. It's the theft that operates in the 3 branches of government of this colonial state, this nation state. Today we showed them that we are here and stronger than ever.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The Quarantine Report, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Today, a Democracy Now! Special, celebrating 25 years on the air. On February 19, 1996, on the eve of the New Hampshire presidential primary, Democracy Now! Aired for the first time on 9 community radio stations.
This is Democracy Now! From Pacifica Radio, I'm Amy Goodman in Washington. Today on Democracy Now!, Live Free or Die, a look at the political landscape in New Hampshire, where the Republican Revolution has taken its toll.
If you want a taste of the country after the revolution, you might as well visit New Hampshire today, because we're the state that has the most regressive taxes in the country, that doesn't have mandatory kindergarten, that doesn't invest in its infrastructure.
Also, the politics of race in the Granite State, and money talks. Who are the millionaires having their way in Washington?
You need to go up to Bob Dole now that he's on this corporate welfare line and say, you know, okay, that's great that you've taken up this plank. Whose corporate jet did you fly up here on? Dwayne Andreas, the number 3 on the Mother Jones list, or Carl Lindner, the number 4 on the Mother Jones list? You need to relentlessly expose them.
All coming up on Democracy Now! Today is President's Day, and tomorrow is the New Hampshire primary. Welcome to the maiden voyage of Democracy Now!, Pacifica's daily national election show. Greetings to our audiences in California, Texas, New York, Pennsylvania, Washington, D.C., Washington State, Kansas City, and Colorado. In this election year, we're embarking on a nine-month journey through the country and hope to pick up community radio stations in many more states as we go, as we give voice to the grassroots.
And that nine-month project, well, began 25 years ago. That's right. Democracy Now! Went on the air on nine community radio stations. It was the only daily election show in broadcasting, public broadcasting. It now airs on over 1,500 TV and radio stations around the globe. In 1998, Democracy Now! Documented Chevron's role in the killing of two protesters who occupied a Chevron-owned oil platform in the oil-rich Niger Delta in Nigeria. Democracy Now! Correspondent Jeremy Scahill and I traveled to the Niger Delta to investigate and produce the special documentary Drilling and Killing, Chevron and Nigeria's Oil Dictatorship. This is an excerpt.
Until now, Chevron has claimed that its only action against the occupation was to call the federal authorities and tell them what was happening. But in a startling admission in a three-hour interview with Democracy Now!, Chevron spokesperson Shola Amole acknowledged that Chevron did much more. He admitted that Chevron actually flew in the soldiers who did the killing, and he further admitted that those men were from the notorious Nigerian Navy.
I guess...
Who took them in?
What's that?
Who took them in?
Who took them in?
On Thursday morning, the mobile police, the
We did,
Navy.
We did. We Chevron did. We took them there.
By how?
Helicopters, yes, we took them in.
Who authorized the call for the military to come in?
Chevron's management.
And so here we have, on May 28, 1998, Chevron flying in the Nigerian Navy and the mobile police to confront a group of villagers who thought they were in the midst of a negotiation with the oil giant. Which brings us to another admission by Chevron spokesperson Shola Amole. Again, listen carefully.
Were any of these armed?
I don't know. So I cannot say that they came armed with, there was talk about local charms and all that, but that's neither here nor there.
So you don't think that they came onto the boat armed?
No.
The youths? Mm-hmm.
It is very clear that Chevron, just like Shell, uses the military to protect its oil activities. They drill and they kill.
Again, environmentalist Oronto Douglas.
They are shooting our people for just demanding for their right.
Democracy Now! Grew into a daily television show in 2001, the week of September 11, 2001, to be exact. But one of our first TV broadcasts took place in August 2000 at the Republican National Convention in Philadelphia.
From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now! Breaking with convention, power protest, and the presidency. George Bush accepts the Republican nomination for president. We'll get reaction from Barbara Gonzalez and Agello Biafra. Also, a look at the conduct of the Philadelphia police this week and a tour through the Independent Media Center. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, broadcasting on community radio stations around the country, on public access TV stations around the country, on the internet, both live streaming and video casting at www.democracynow.org in an unprecedented community media collaboration. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez as we continue a reaction to the nomination speech of the acceptance speech of George W. Bush for nomination by the Republican Party as their presidential candidate. Juan?
Yes, as I said, an amazing speech by Bush. And, it, you know, he actually put a attempted basically to portray himself as a caring, sensitive, compassionate conservative, but the reality of the message that he was bringing of increased military spending, of privatization of social of portions of Social Security accounts, of charter schools that would help to begin to tear apart the public school system rather than raise the level of the public school system throughout, I think was one that was clearly at the right fringe of American politics today.
On Election Day 2000, then-President Bill Clinton called Pacifica radio station WBAI in an attempt to get out the vote for Hillary for Senate and Al Gore for president. While he may have intended to spend about 2 minutes on the phone, WBAI host Gonzalo Alberto and I kept him on the line for about half an hour, asking about topics that weren't being discussed in the presidential race.
Mr. President, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
You're calling radio stations to tell people to get out and vote. What do you say to people who feel that the two parties are bought by corporations and that they are, at this point, feel that their vote doesn't make a difference?
There's not a shred of evidence to support that.
President Clinton, UN figures show that up to 5,000 children a month die in Iraq because of the sanctions against
Iraq. That's not true. That's not true. And that's not what they show.
The past two UN heads of the program in Iraq have quit, calling the U.S. Policy, U.S.-UN policy, genocidal. What is your response to that?
They're wrong. They think that we should reward Saddam Hussein says, I'm going to starve my kids unless you let me buy nuclear weapons, chemical weapons, and biological weapons. If you let me do everything I want to do so I can get in a position to kill and intimidate people again, then I'll stop starving my kids. And so we're supposed to assume responsibility for his misconduct. That's just not right.
Many people say that Ralph Nader is at the high percentage point he is in the polls because you've been responsible for taking the Democratic Party to the right.
What is the measure of taking the Democratic Party to the right? That we cut the welfare rolls in half, that poverty is at a 20-year low, that child poverty has been cut by a third in our administration, that the schools in this country, that the test scores among, since we've required all the schools to have basic standards, test scores among African Americans and other minorities have gone up steadily.
Can I say what
now,
some people...
Now, wait a minute. You started this, and every question you've asked has been hostile and combative. So you listen to my answer. Will you do that?
They've been critical.
Now, you just listen to me. You ask the questions, and I'm going to answer. You have asked questions in a hostile, combative, and even disrespectful tone, and you have never been able to combat the facts I have given you. Now, you listen to this.
That was President Clinton in a surprise call to WBAI on Election Day in 2000. The White House would later call me and say they were thinking of banning me from the White House. And I said, but he called me. I didn't call him. Well, when we come back, we'll continue our look back at the past 25 years of Democracy Now!
Gonna lay down my sword and shield.
Down by the riverside.
The Riverside in our old firehouse studio at DC TV in 2003. This is Democracy Now!, the Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman. On the morning of September 11, 2001, Democracy Now! Was on the air when the World Trade Center was attacked down the street. Broadcasting on radio for over 6 hours, Democracy Now! Covered the attacks just blocks from Ground Zero.
The latest news we have is that there have been widespread attacks that include at least 3 commercial jet crashes. We now believe perhaps 4, 3 commercial jet crashes into significant buildings. In the first attack, a plane hit the North Tower of the World Trade Center in Manhattan shortly before 9 o'clock, followed by another plane into the second tower about 20 minutes later. Both towers later collapsed. About an hour hour later, a plane crashed into the Pentagon, part of which later collapsed.
Democracy Now! Closely followed the fallout from the 9/11 attacks, both at home and abroad. In December, Masuda Sultan, an Afghan-American woman, reported on Democracy Now! From Afghanistan about a U.S. air raid that killed 19 members of her family.
They described the scene where they were running with their kit in their arms, dodging bullets left and right while they had, well, they saw balls of fire falling down to the earth. There were women and children running for their lives, being shot at by a helicopter hovering over their homes. And these people were not Taliban supporters. They weren't al-Qaeda fighters. They were simple Afghans trying to stay safe in their own country.
After Masuda Sultan came back to New York, she came on Democracy Now! Along with Rita Lazar, a New Yorker who lost her brother at the World Trade Center.
I live on the 15th floor and ran to my neighbor's house, and she has a clear view of downtown Manhattan. And I looked out her window and saw the second plane hit the second building. And it dawned on me, my brother works there. I went down to the hospitals to see if his name was on the list. And then I realized he had died. And because he had stayed behind to stay with his quadriplegic brother, I'm sorry, friend, who couldn't get out, although he was on the 27th floor and he could have saved himself, he died. And then President Bush mentioned him in the National Cathedral speech and cited him as being a hero. And I realized that my government was going to use my brother as justification for killing other people. And that had a tremendous impact on me. I didn't want that to happen, not in my brother's name.
First of all, I want to express my condolences to Rita. I did before, but I think your brother is a hero, and you're a hero for continuing his legacy. And it's amazing to me that someone who's lost so much isn't as revenge hungry as some of the other people that seem to want to, you know, go start bombing, you know, whoever, wherever.
That's Masuda Sultan and Rita Lazar in our Firehouse studio. Rita died in 2017. As we continue our Democracy Now! Journey through the decades, on May 20th, 2002, East Timor became one of the newest nations in the world, an independent country after decades of occupation by Indonesia. I had been reporting on East Timorese independent movement for years. On November 12th, 1991, journalist Alan Nairn and I were there when Indonesian troops armed with U.S.-made M16 rifles opened fire on thousands of unarmed East Timorese civilians gathered at the Santa Cruz Cemetery.
I lost one sister and two brothers.
It was 10 days before I was to give birth. The army was shooting people, and they would die at our feet, but you couldn't stop to help them.
I know families that were totally wiped out.
Two American newsmen badly beaten, Mr. Alan Lane and Ms. Amy Goodman.
The Indonesian army converged in two places.
Hundreds and hundreds of troops coming straight at the Timorese.
When they came, they opened fire on the people.
Well, we pride ourselves, and I think properly so, in standing up for human rights.
271 Timorese were killed on that day. The Indonesian military fractured Alan's skull. More than a decade later, East Timor became an independent country. Alan Nairn and I returned to the capital, Dili, for the ceremony. Alan questioned former President Bill Clinton.
In 1999, in April,
The Indonesian military and their militias massacred 50 people in the rectory in Likisaa. They hacked them with machetes. 2 days later, Admiral Blair, the commander for the Pacific, your commander, met with General Wiranto, the Indonesian commander. He offered to help him in lobbying the U.S. Congress to get full U.S. military training restored. He made no mention of the Likisaa massacre. During that same period, the Indonesian militias rampaged here in downtown Dili. They attacked the house of Manuel Carrascalau. They massacred the refugees there. Yet you continued for months with aid to the Indonesian military.
Why? What is your question, sir?
Why did you continue with aid to the Indonesian military?
They were
killing civilians.
I can't answer the question you asked about Admiral Blair. You'll have to ask him that, because I'm not aware of that.
He was working for you. Why did you continue military aid to
Indonesia? I understand that. I think, first of all, I don't believe America or any of the other countries was sufficiently sensitive in the beginning and for a long time, and a long time before 1999, going all the way back to the 70s, to the suffering of the people of East Timor. I don't think we can defend everything we did.
That was East Timor. Almost a year later, on February 15, 2003, millions of people around the world rallied to say no to the Iraq War. Democracy Now! Broadcasts live from a massive protest here in New York. This is actor and activist Harry Belafonte.
This is not the first time that we as a people have been misled by the leadership. We were misled by those who created the falseness of the Bay of Tonkin, which falsely led us into a war with Vietnam, a war that we could not and did not win. We lied to the American people about Grenada and what was going on in that tiny island. We've lied to the American people about Nicaragua, El Salvador, Cuba, and many places in the world. And we stand here today to let those people and others know that America is a vast and diverse country, and we are part of the greater truth of what makes our nation. Dr. King once said that if mankind does not put an end to war, war will put an end to mankind.
In 2004, Democracy Now! Broke the news about the ouster of Haitian President Jean-Bertrand Aristide in a U.S.-backed coup.
From Pacifica Radio, this is a Democracy Now! Exclusive.
He was kidnapped. He said he was forced to leave Haiti.
Did U.S. security forces kidnap Haitian President Aristide? We'll speak with Congressmember Maxine Waters and Aristide's close friend, TransAfrica founder Randall Robinson.
He said, tell the world it's a coup. It's a coup. It's a coup.
Representative Waters is claiming on Pacifica stations on the West Coast that Aristide was led away in handcuffs by U.S. Marines, and claiming that the Marines were part of a coup to remove him. I wonder if either one of you gentlemen would comment on her comment or claim. Other than the smile.
Trying to pick the right words. If you're asking me, did that happen, the answer is no.
But any embellishment?
I think not today.
Years later, Democracy Now! Reported on President Aristide's return to Haiti from the Central African Republic to Haiti on the plane.
It's been an historic 48 hours. Haitian President Jean-Bertrand Aristide has defied Washington, returning to the Caribbean. Late last night, I returned to New York after a trip that began on Saturday when I accompanied a delegation of U.S. and Jamaican officials who set off from Miami, Florida, on a mission to escort President Aristide and his wife, Mildred, back to the Caribbean. On the plane, I asked President Aristide why he believes the U.S. wants him gone.
Those who want to invest in killing democracy, in bloodshed, they don't accept you as an elected president.
We move forward in this Democracy Now! 25-year special. Just days after Hurricane Katrina hit in 2005, Democracy Now! Went down to New Orleans in the community of Algiers. I spoke with Malik Rahim, co-founder of the Common Ground Collective. He showed us how a corpse still remained on the street unattended 2 weeks after the storm.
Now, his body been here for almost 2 weeks, 2 weeks tomorrow, all right, that this man been body been laying here. And there's no reason for it. I mean, that's just totally disrespect. You know, and I mean, 2 weeks, every day we ask him about come and pick it up. And they refuse to come and pick it up. And you can see it's literally decomposing right here, right out in the sun. Every day we sit up and we ask them about it. Because, I mean, this is the closest you could get to tropical climate in America. And they won't do anything with it.
Malik, do you know who this person is?
No. But regardless of who it is, I wouldn't care if it's Saddam Hussein or Bin Laden. Nobody deserves to be left here. And the kids pass by here and they're seeing it. I mean, the elderly, this is what frightened a lot of people into leaving. We don't know if he's a victim of vigilantes or what, but that's all we know is that his body has been allowed to remain out here for over 2 weeks.
In September 2005, Democracy Now! Met with Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez in his first sit-down interview in the United States.
Mr. President Hugo Chavez, your assessment of President Bush, of the invasion and occupation of Iraq, and do you think if it weren't Iraq, it would have been Venezuela?
Ellos quieren ese petróleo.
Now, it is clear that the U.S. Government wants
planificar
oil. That's why they planned.
Primero fueron por el de Venezuela.
First, they tried to get the Venezuelan
fue el golpe
oil.
Contra nosotros.
And that was the coup they staged.
Eso fue un golpe
against
petrolero.
Us. That was an oil-motivated coup.
Querían tener asegurado
they
el petróleo venezolano.
Have the control over Venezuelan oil.
Para luego ir por el de Irak.
Were going for the Iraq for Iraq's oil.
Fracasaron en Venezuela.
They failed in Venezuela.
Se lanzaron sobre Irak.
So they rather went to attack Iraq.
In 2007, then CNN anchor Lou Dobbs was interviewed by Juan Gonzalez and I on Democracy Now.
So that the question is that there is a huge disparity between the economic levels in Mexico and the economic levels in the United States. And you have properly said many times on your show that American companies are creating the problems rather than helping to alleviate the problems. It, all that would be needed to do is to raise the economic level in Mexico and the entire illegal immigration population problems would decline in this country. And not only that, but the country, if it had a higher immigration
quota. Are you giving me instruction or are you telling me what we agree upon?
No, we don't agree. We don't agree because you are demonizing illegal immigration as a separate issue.
How in the world can you use my name and anti-immigrant in the same breath?
When we hear comments like a third of the from you, we've played them, so we can't refute the videotape. Look, we can't refute. A third of prisoners are illegal immigrants. A third of prisoners are illegal immigrants. Not true. 7,000 leprosy cases in the last 3 years because of illegal immigrants.
Christine Romans misspoke. We said that, and that's as straightforward as we can.
And you made an announcement on your show,
absolutely,
and you will say it here.
Absolutely.
That it is not true. Illegal immigrants are not responsible for 7,000 cases of leprosy over the last 3 years.
Not over the last 3 years.
That's Lou Dobbs on Democracy Now! In 2007. Fox Business recently dropped his show after he and the network were sued for spreading lies about the 2020 election. Well, on September 1st, 2008, Democracy Now! Producer Sharif Abdelkaddous, Nicole Salazar and I were among the journalists arrested during a police crackdown at the Republican National Convention in St. Paul. As the riot police came at Nicole shouting, "On your face," she shouted back, "Press, press."
That was Nicole Salazar screaming as the riot police took her down, bloodying her face. As Sharif Abdelkaddous told the riot police to calm down, they kicked him twice in the chest, threw him against a wall, and arrested him as well. When I got the call on the convention floor about what had happened, I raced outside to the corner of 7th and Jackson, where the riot police had formed a line, having fully contained the area. I asked to speak with a commanding officer to get Sharif and Nicole released.
Sharif, Nicole, and I would sue the St. Paul and Minneapolis police. When we come back, we'll have more on our 25th anniversary special in a moment. Nicole Salazar has just won a major producer award at Sundance for producing a series called Philly DA. Stay with us.
People have the power.
People of the Power, Patti Smith performing live at Riverside Church in 2016, marking Democracy Now!'s 20th anniversary. Michael Stipe was in the audience of REM, and he jumped up on the stage and joined her. To see all of the full shows that include these excerpts, you can go to democracynow.org. Yes, this is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. As we continue to look at 25 years of Democracy Now!, we turn to the Egyptian revolution that ousted President Hosni Mubarak in 2011. Democracy Now!'s Sharif Abdelkaddous was on the ground in Cairo.
Here we're on the edge of Tahrir Square. There are many rocks and stones that have littered the ground here. Army tanks are stationed, but they just stood by as Mubarak's thugs came in on horseback and camel and attacked crowds. There's many wounded here in slings. They're bandaged. Here's a child. He's about 5 or 6 years old. He's being fed yogurt by his mother. He's bruised on the side of his face. I asked his mother what happened to him, and she said, he's a revolutionary. He's fighting for his future.
Mubarak resigned 1 week after Sharif Abdelkaddous's report. As we move on right now, we're moving on to talk about September 21st, 2011. Democracy Now! Broadcasting live for 6 hours from the grounds of the prison in Georgia where Troy Anthony Davis was executed. We're the only news outlet to continuously broadcast live from the prison grounds.
From Georgia's death row prison in Jackson, this is a Democracy Now! Special broadcast. We are just an hour from the scheduled execution of Troy Anthony Davis, an execution the whole world is watching.
And I just would like to say that, you know, I've been battling cancer for 10 years, and I don't have cancer, but I'm reaping some of the effects of the medicine. Several months ago, I was doing fine. And after that, I couldn't get up out of the chair. But I'm here to tell you that I'm going to stand here for my brother today.
Mama. Thank you. Let's go.
Anthony Davis has been carried out. The time of death is 11:08 p.m. At this time, the media witnesses will be coming out to give their firsthand account of what happened during the execution.
Again, prison official sharing the news that Troy Anthony Davis was executed at 11:08. That was the time of death. I'm standing with
Wesley Boyd. And I'd like to say there's been a travesty of justice, and I'd like to tell America ought to be ashamed of itself and God help America. And if you're alive with America, please don't come to Georgia. Don't come to Georgia. Don't buy any Georgia pecans. Don't buy any Georgia peaches. Don't buy any trade with Georgia, the whole world. Don't buy anything with Georgia. God bless America. And God bless Troy Davis.
In July of 2014, Israel launched a massive 50-day assault on Gaza in July, ultimately killing more than 2,200 Palestinians, the majority of them civilians, including more than 500 children. An Israeli gunboat shelled a group of Palestinian children on a Gaza beach, killing four of them. Democracy Now!'s Sharif Abdo-Qudus was in Gaza, where he spoke with the boys' families.
I also met with the mother today of Muhammad, the 11-year-old who was killed. She said he was a child that loved the sea. He had seven sisters. His father ruined his back about 10 years ago fishing, and they were waiting for him to grow and become the family breadwinner. And there was just deep tragedy and sorrow in the house.
On August 9, 2014, in Ferguson, Missouri, Darren Wilson, a white police officer, fatally shot unarmed African-American teenager Michael Brown. The shooting sparked mass protests, became a key moment in the Black Lives Matter movement. In the aftermath of the shooting, Democracy Now! Traveled to Ferguson.
So tell me your name and tell me what your sign says and what do you think?
My name is Rona, and my sign is Negro Spring. The same as the Arabs fought for their rights, for their civil rights to oust their corrupt government, we're fighting for our civil rights, our human rights. We would like, as an end result to this, one of the end results, for there to be a law. Police officers should not be allowed to hide behind a badge when they commit a crime. When we commit a crime, we have the penalties. They should have penalties. It's not fair. They should not be treated like extra special humans.
What do we want?
In July 2015, Democracy Now! Interviewed all three co-founders of the Black Lives Matter movement, Patrice Cullors, Opal Tometi, and Alicia Garza. This is Alicia.
The Black Lives Matter movement has to, by its very nature, be intersectional because of the complexities of who Black people are in this country and throughout the world. There's nothing separate about wages from Black life and the survival of Black people than police violence and police terrorism. We even still have a situation in this country where we have Black workers who are not covered by federal labor protections, like domestic workers and farm workers. So we certainly can't just look at the issues of police violence. Police violence is the tip of the iceberg when it relates to the conditions overall of Black people across the globe.
In 2015, Democracy Now!'s Nermeen Sheikh and I and the team were in Paris for the historic UN Climate Change Summit. While in France, we traveled an hour and a half north to the city of Calais, site of the largest refugee camp in France. 6,000 to 7,000 people were camped out in makeshift tents in what was known as the jungle.
My name is Majd. I'm from Syria. I'm here like everyone. I'm a refugee escaped from the war. Everyone is fighting in my country. Yes. So I escaped from the war. I don't want to be dead for nothing.
We're just back from Majid's tent, where he lives with two other men. And we're now on the street of, well, makeshift restaurants. There's a barber shop. This is the Kabul Cafe. And right here, as we're going in, is a map of the whole camp.
My name is Sikandar. I'm from Afghanistan.
The map of this camp, it's like a map of the world, or a part of the world.
Yeah.
It's a map of where refugees are from. Most of these countries have been bombed by the United States.
I really didn't think about it. The map of the jungle is looking like the map of the world.
Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq,
yeah.
Sudan.
Yeah, it's true. I didn't think about it, but yeah, it's true.
My name is Sadiq Hussein Khel, and I am from Afghanistan.
So what do you think the U.S. should be doing now?
You know, U.S. is just increasing the war. Actually, U.S. don't want to finish the war. It's their game. It's the game of George W. Bush, Obama, and all the European Union. They don't want to finish that.
Moving on to 2016, Democracy Now! Traveled to the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation in North Dakota to document the historic indigenous uprising against the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Criminals! You guys are criminals! Go get your money somewhere else!
Yes, you!
We're standing at the construction site of the Dakota Access Pipeline. It looks like there are at least three bulldozers that are, to people's surprise at this moment, actually bulldozing the land. There's a helicopter above, there's security here, and hundreds of people have been marching up when they heard that the construction site is actually active right now.
Look what you did to it!
People have gone through the fence, men, women, and children. The bulldozers are still going, and they're yelling at the men in hard hats. One man in hard hat threw
Amy Goodman, this guy maced me in the face.
Can you show us the label?
Look, it's all over my sunglasses. Just maced me in the face. Dog bit him right now.
Throw the dog on me. Just throw the dog on me. Look at this. Look at this.
Let me say.
Throw the dog on me. No, you did it on purpose, man.
Let me say.
Over there, with that dog. I was like walking, throw the dog on me straight, even without any warning, you know? Look at this. Look at this. Yeah, the dog did it, you know? Look at this. Yeah,
dog did it. Man, your dog just... Protester. Are you telling the dogs to bite the protesters? The dog has blood in its nose and its mouth. Why are you letting her dog go after the protesters? It's covered in blood.
Only a few hours before the attack, we sat down with Standing Rock Sioux tribal historian LaDonna Bravebull Allard.
I don't understand why we are expendable in America. I keep telling people, we do our best. We have always been here. This is our land. Why should we fight to live in our own land? Why should we have to do that over and over again? So we have no choice. We have to stand. No matter what happens, we have to stand to save the water.
We posted the video of the Dapple Guard attack on the indigenous water protectors. And over around 24, 48 hours, there were 14 million views. North Dakota issued an arrest warrant for me. We returned for the arraignment, but they would ultimately drop the charges, though hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of indigenous people were arrested over the months of that protest. In late 2016, Democracy Now! Became the first foreign television news crew to get into occupied Western Sahara in years.
We're in occupied Western Sahara, in Layoun, the capital of what many call Africa's last colony. Morocco occupied Western Sahara more than 40 years ago, in 1975.
Western Sahara, where peaceful protesters led by women are beaten in the streets. Thousands have been tortured, imprisoned, killed, and disappeared while resisting the Moroccan occupation.
He jabbed right at my eye with his baton. I was yelling at him, "Hey, you Moroccan, you pulled out my eye."
Where natural resources are plundered from phosphates to fish.
I say that our damnation comes from the natural resources we have here. If it wasn't for these natural resources, Morocco would never have invaded Western Sahara.
Where a massive wall divides a people, the Sahrawi, the native population, denied a vote for self-determination.
If we don't speak out, especially us as victims who have suffered all of this, if we don't speak out and defend our cause, this problem will remain.
In the days after Donald Trump's inauguration in 2017, Democracy Now! Closely covered the growing protest movement from the historic Women's March to protests over Trump's Muslim ban. This is Democracy Now!'s Nermeen Sheikh at JFK Airport.
We're outside New York City's John F. Kennedy Airport, outside Terminal 4.
where thousands of people have gathered to protest the Trump administration's executive order, which has prevented many people from seven Muslim-majority countries from entering the United States. More than 10 of them here detained at Terminal 4. Thousands of people here chanting, "Let them in. This is what democracy looks like, and refugees welcome here." Let's talk to some of the people here.
My name is Mamida Ahmed, and I'm here today because as a Muslim woman, I find this ban extremely just personal to me because I have family members who are on visa, and now they are at risk of not being able to leave or enter the country.
In 2018, Democracy Now! Traveled to the Delta Conservation Camp, a jail an hour north of San Francisco, to meet the prisoners who are fighting California's devastating wildfires. We begin today's show with the hidden heroes on the front lines of California's raging climate-fueled wildfires, prisoner firefighters. They make a dollar an hour, but are rarely eligible to get jobs as firefighters after their release. According to some estimates, California saves up to $100 million a year by using prison labor to fight its biggest environmental problem. The Democracy Now! Team traveled to the Delta Conservation Camp, about an hour north of San Francisco, to a low-security prison where more than 100 men are imprisoned.
My name is Marty Vincent. I'm 25 years old, and I came to this camp about mid-July this year.
You're risking your life here.
It's exactly what's going on. Everything we do, you know, no one's really promised to come back.
And how much do you make?
A dollar an hour.
When you're fighting a fire?
When you're fighting a fire, a dollar an hour. When you're on typical grade, you make $1.45 a day.
Some have called it slave labor. What do you think of that?
I don't really want to call the work slave work, but I feel like it's their whole mentality and what they're thinking about at the end of the day. No matter what, regardless if we're incarcerated or we're free, we're getting paid a dollar an hour.
We were surrounded by guards as he spoke. In 2018, the Democracy Now! Team reported from the U.S.-Mexico border in Texas. We're broadcasting from Brownsville, Texas, along the U.S.-Mexico border. Behind me, the border wall that stretches in sections all the way through California. This Rio Grande Valley is the epicenter of the Trump administration's zero-tolerance policy that's led to the forcible separation of more than 2,000 children from their parents. People who are at the Keep Families Together rally here in Brownsville have now walked forward to enter the federal courthouse here in Brownsville. So many migrants who've been separated from their children. They're demanding to go inside. Police are here, security of the Department of Homeland Security. We'll see what happens.
My name is Julia Madrigal.
We're here to request access to the court hearings that are taking place. So that's the main reason we're here. We want to be allowed into the hearings at this moment.
We're about to enter the federal courthouse to see the treatment of the children and the parents. Because Trump has said that the parents they won't be separating the children. But Trump also said that they shouldn't even have court or lawyers or judges.
In December 2018, Democracy Now! Traveled to Poland for the UN Climate Summit, where I spoke with then-15-year-old Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg in her first broadcast interview in the U.S.
Because what we do now, future generations can't undo in the future. We are deciding right now how we want our future to look like.
And when did you decide climate change was the issue you wanted to devote your life to?
I have read a lot of about it, and one thing that I found very scary is tipping points. That once we reach tipping points, then there's no going back. Then we start a chain reaction beyond our control, and that is very scary. And so that I thought instead of worrying about how the future might turn out, you should try to change it while you still can. So that's what I wanted to do.
And we end our 25th anniversary special with the words of Angela Davis speaking in June 2020.
This is an extraordinary moment. I've never experienced anything like the conditions we are currently experiencing. The conjuncture created by the COVID-19 pandemic and the recognition of the systemic racism that has been rendered visible under these conditions because of the disproportionate deaths in Black and Latinx communities. And this is a moment I don't know whether I ever expected to experience.
Those are just some of the highlights from the first 25 years of Democracy Now!, kicking off our 25th anniversary year. We will be playing excerpts and posting in social media and our website, democracynow.org, many of the programs we want to highlight. We want to thank the hundreds, if not thousands, of people who have helped us over these 25 years. What an honor it has been to work with all of you. With my colleague Juan Gonzalez and Nermeen Sheikh, we thank all of you for being with us for 25 years. I'm Amy Goodman. Wear a mask. Where to? Stay safe. Thank you so much.